This is Sigrid Schultz, the Berlin correspondent of the Chicago Tribune, calling from Berlin. There is barely a man, woman, or child you meet in Berlin tonight who will not tell you. It is just a matter of hours until Danzig has been returned to the Reich. They point to the German papers, which all day long carried headlines about the mobilization of Polish troops and about Polish fire directed against German airplanes. In rich or poor restaurants alike, the waiter who knows you comes up and asks you, "How long do you think it will take until the Danzig matter is settled?" There is barely another topic of conversation beside that of Danzig. It has been mentioned so often that some have said they would like to have just one single mark, or a quarter, for every time the name of Danzig has been mentioned. They would be rich for the rest of their lives. The fact that people can make this kind of remark about the question of Danzig shows that they feel it is not fraught with tragedy, but that it is a natural development for which they are ready to stand up. Today, you could see a few anxious faces as the anti-aircraft guns were being maneuvered into position on top of the German Die Trust building opposite the Hotel Adlon and many other points that are considered of strategic importance for the defense of the German capital. The boys of the Air Force in blue-gray were roaring through Berlin in their huge trucks, and like the warriors of old World War days, they were looking out for the young girls and exchanged their best smiles with them. If you walked by the new Chancellery of Germany for a few hours this noon, you could see a huge crane swing out its arm into the Poststrasse. If you stopped to ask the passerby what this meant, he looked at you as if you were the real cousin from the country who had never been to the big city. It is obvious that this is for the anti-aircraft units that are on the roof, your Berliner answered, rather disgusted with your lack of military knowledge. At the American embassy and at American consulates, tourists were calling to inquire whether they should return home. They were told that unless they had important business, they would do well if they left. It is surprising to see how many people suddenly discovered that they could settle their affairs quite quickly to catch this or that train that would bring them closer to the ports from which they could sail for America. Early this morning, the papers published the Russo-German Treaty and its 7 articles. Never in the past 5 years have the Berliners bought papers with greater eagerness than they did this morning. They wanted to learn about the great diplomatic feat of their country and the extent of their union with Russia. Even the German who has not had a lengthy schooling knows that the old Iron Chancellor, Prince Bismarck, always favored an alliance with Russia. He read it in his papers after the war, if he did not remember it from his school days. He remembers that some of the writers blame the disaster which swept over Germany in 1918 on the Kaiser's failure to keep up the good relations with Russia. And above all, every German, and especially every North German, is a born soldier. He knows that it is hard to fight a war on two fronts. The idea that the Russian steamroller no longer can threaten his country in the background fills his heart and his mind with delight. The popular imagination, when reading about the Russo-German Treaty, immediately seized on it. In stores, you could hear people tell each other that some distant relatives of theirs had actually seen Soviet officers in uniform in Berlin a week ago on their way to negotiate in the Wilhelmstrasse. The man in the coffee house will tell you a marvelous story about the military strength of Russia and her air force and about her economic resources. One eager Berliner told me, when the English military mission arrived in Moscow and tried to high-hat the Russians, Molotov gave them a bag of kernels of wheat. The English were surprised when they asked what it meant. He told them, "Count the grains, and you will know how many airplanes we have." This gives a tremendous feeling of strength and confidence to the masses, because as the story travels on, it gets better and better. Tonight, great excitement prevailed in front of the Chancellery. The rumor in Berlin. Stop. the rumor spread that Hitler had arrived in his capital. The population started trickling down to the square in front of the Chancellery to pay its homage to Führer Hitler. Photographers and a broadcasting truck pulled up. Thereupon, the news spread like wildfire that the Führer would speak. But this turned out not to be the case. Instead, Foreign Minister Herr von Ribbentrop arrived at the Chancellery after his historical flight to Moscow. He had started from Königsberg, his plane for Salzburg, but en route he received word that Hitler would be in Berlin and await him there. With open arms, Hitler greeted his foreign minister, and men close to the Chancellery assert that the greatest optimism prevails there tonight. What, with Russia forming the eastern bulwark for Germany today, and the Siegfried lines protecting Germany in the west, Hitler's aides feel that their country has never been in as strong a position as it is today. Those who remember the difficulties Germany had in making the Russians turn over products to them when they held southern Russia in 1918 are less optimistic about the chance of an immediate, big-scale exchange of goods between Germany and Russia. This is ridiculed by the Nazis and Nazi officials, who declare that the authoritarian powers, both the Russians and the Germans, where the carefully built-up national organizations at their beck and call, are now in a position to organize the exchange much more efficiently than the old-time businessmen. Though the population tonight, under the impression of the reports about Danzig being threatened by the Poles, believes that Führer Hitler will act very soon to relieve the Germans in Danzig and in the corridor from Polish rule, rumors keep circulating that Poland's Foreign Minister Beck is coming to Berlin to try to negotiate a compromise with the Führer of Germany. In the days, not so long ago, when Germany and Poland were allies, Beck was a frequent caller in the Chancellery and in Hitler's hometown in southern Bavaria. They discussed the ways and means of bringing about a perfect pacification of the districts in which German and Polish minorities are settled together. Foreign Minister of Poland Beck and the Führer of Germany Hitler, the Germans assert, frequently talked about the possibility of exchanging their minority groups and resettling them in their respective countries. Some think that if the Poles knew how far Poland's Foreign Minister Beck went in his promises to Führer Hitler, they would lose faith in him. It is interesting to note that in the flood of denunciations against Poland, which appeared in the German press, Foreign Minister Beck has rarely been attacked. Therefore, many believe there is still a slight chance for a peaceful settlement with Poland, giving in to Germany's demands. But if the Poles fail to fulfill Germany's demands, the population is ready to follow Hitler's orders.